From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. A while ago, we broadcast a show that asked the question, what might happen if the Supreme Court of the United States sided with an ordinance out of Grants Pass, Oregon, that made public camping illegal and, some argue, actually criminalize homelessness? Well, the theoretical has become the reality, because indeed, the court did recently rule in favor of that local ordinance. So, what happens now? Today on Oregon on the Record, you'll hear first from a colleague of mine at Jefferson Public Radio who's followed this issue closely and has gotten some important local reaction to what happens next. Then, you'll hear from a legal scholar and law professor who'll explain the ruling and provide insight on what might happen in cities throughout our state. It's a new legal frontier for the issue of homelessness, and we'll talk about it next. In a ruling that many cities have been waiting for across the nation, the Supreme Court has now ruled that yes, cities can make it illegal to sleep outside, even if there's no place for a person to go. A colleague of mine down south is going to join us now and give us the perspective from the city that started it all, Grants Pass. Jane Vaughn, reporter for Jefferson Public Radio, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Grants Pass, small town in Oregon, you know, I'm just wondering in sort of the people you've talked to and following this issue about Grants Pass versus Johnson, you know, in the people you talk to, is it kind of almost surreal that their small town has become this sort of, you know, this lightning rod test case for a case that's now been adjudicated is the law of the land about the unhoused?
For sure. Grants Pass, if you look at it, sort of seems like an odd place to be the center of this massive Supreme Court case. It's mm-hmm. in sort of a rural county in southwestern Oregon. There's about 40,000 people. It's not that big a city. You might expect Portland or Seattle to be sort of the center of this.
Yeah.
And I think in some ways people are kind of surprised to have found this to gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. But then also talking to some people in the city, they were a little bit not surprised because it is such a growing problem across the West Coast in particular. And the city in general has been underbuilding in terms of the amount of housing that it needs, as has much of Oregon. And so there's a lot of people moving in. There's not enough housing. The population has grown a lot in recent years. There hasn't been a lot of support from the city council. I've been talking to the mayor, Sarah Bristol, about that they haven't had a whole lot of support to really address this problem from the council in recent years. And there was actually years ago sort of an effort to push homeless people out of town, basically from previous councilors. So it is kind of surprising since it is sort of a smaller town, but it also is really just one example of a lot of cities across the country, across the West Coast, that are struggling with really similar issues of not enough housing and a growing homeless population and all of those sort of things.
Yeah, yeah. You filed a great story about this right after sort of the ruling, and that's why I wanted to talk to you. And certainly in your story, you talked to the mayor of Grants Pass, you know. Is she, you know, describe her mood with this ruling now. Is it kind of like, you know, drinking from a fire hose to try and figure out what this means for the city? Is it kind of like, well, we'll just kind of see how it plays out? Give us, if you could, sort of set the table for what the, you know, the chief figurehead for Grants Pass is saying about all this.
Yeah, for sure. It's a little bit of both. So the mayor, as I said, is named Sarah Bristol, and mm-hmm. I spoke with her on Friday in Grants Pass on the day of the decision. She was saying, first of all, she's glad the decision has been made. You know, whatever the decision is, it's just nice to have an answer because the original legal complaint dates back to 2018. So this has been an ongoing legal battle for really almost 6 years. And so the city has kind of been waiting for a conclusion, and she's excited to just have an answer and be able to move forward. But like you said, it is a little bit like drinking from a fire hose because it's kind of complicated now in terms of what the city will do next. So number one, the city has been under a court injunction for the past 4 years as part of this case, as the case has been ongoing. And that court injunction says that the city can't enforce its camping ordinances in any city park except one. And so it's not clear to Mayor Bristol when that court injunction will be lifted when they can get back to enforcing those camping ordinances. She was also concerned about potential violence or animosity towards homeless people in the city in the meantime. She was warning residents to kind of be patient. Things aren't going to change overnight. It takes some time to figure these things out. And so she was hoping that there wouldn't be any increase in violence or any problems like that. I haven't heard any reports of such things. And then the other complicating factor is that Oregon passed a state law in 2021 in the midst of this whole case ongoing that if a city is going to regulate where homeless people can camp or sleep, the city has to be, quote, objectively reasonable when they do that. And I'm doing big air quotes here for objectively reasonable, because that is what the law says, but that term is not defined. So basically, if you're going to, you know, set, they call them time, place, and manner restrictions, you have to be reasonable. So the thing is that Grants Pass hasn't been doing that. The law was passed in 2021, but the city has been sort of in a pause mode because of this ongoing court case. And so now they have to figure out, we have the Supreme Court ruling, what restrictions can we have while we're still following Oregon's state law that's been passed in the meantime? And so Mayor Bristol was saying it's going to be several weeks at least before the city council or the city as a whole can really move forward and come up with some significant changes that people will actually notice.
Yeah, boy. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Jane Vaughn. She's a reporter who's been covering this story for quite some time with Jefferson Public Radio. You know, you also talked to some homeless advocates. You know, what did they tell you? Because I imagine they feel like, wow, this could really, really change things for us locally in Grants Pass.
Talking to the homeless advocates on Friday, they were pretty devastated. One of them called the decision a punch in the gut, and they said it was really painful. They say the decision doesn't actually help homeless people at all. It doesn't improve their situation, doesn't give them any, you know, money or housing. Nothing has changed for them. It's just that now there's this legal ruling saying that you can enforce these camping bans. So they, of course, would rather see homeless people get housing or, you know, actual help. But they also echoed what Mayor Bristol said, which is that they are glad to have a decision. It feels like they've kind of been stuck in this holding pattern for literally years of trying to have this this case heard. And so now at least they have an answer. And their, you know, their work is going to continue. I was talking with this group called MINT, which is the Mobile Integrative Navigation Team. They're a nonprofit that provides services to homeless people. And they were saying, you know, their work is just going to continue. They've got a mobile medical van, they've got nurses, they're doing all this work in the parks. One of them that I spoke with was Ruth Daly, who's a volunteer for MINT. And she was basically talking about how people's behavior is just criminalized when they're living in the parks, which was talked about a lot in the actual court case of whether or not homeless people are being punished for the act of sleeping, which is an unavoidable human act. And then I spoke with some homeless people themselves in Tussing Park in Grants Pass on Friday, and they also, you know, disagreed with the decision. And one man was talking about how the government doesn't really care about them, doesn't care about poor people, small people. You know, they're only looking out for their own interests. So that's that side of things.
Yeah. And of course, you got the other side, which is there are some people who are cheering this ruling and feel like camping should be outlawed. You know, what were some of the comments that you heard from that side of the issue?
So I spoke with this woman named Ginny Stegmiller, who helped form a volunteer group, which is called Park Watch, and they monitor the city's public parks for illegal activity and inform the police. She thinks that the Supreme Court made the right decision in its ruling on Friday. She said that she's concerned about crime and drug use in the park, parks in general. And she also has a few properties near Grants Pass's Riverside Park, which is where a lot of homeless people camp. Mm-hmm. And so she's also concerned about property values in the city. And, you know, she was very clear that she's not anti-homeless. She says she's been homeless herself. She doesn't think that sleeping in the parks is good for anybody. Nobody should be sleeping in the parks. And she would just rather see the city come up with another solution. And so she agrees with the Supreme Court's decision and now hopes that the city would maybe work to build an urban campground or a shelter or something like that. And I should clarify that there are some shelters in the city of Grants Pass, but they, number one, don't have enough beds for the number of people that need it. And number two, they have restrictions or rules for people who stay there. So there's no low barrier shelters in the city. So talking with Ginny Stegmiller, she was saying she'd rather have another solution for people rather than just having everybody camp in the parks so that there's some place for homeless people to go.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Jane, my last question for you is this, you know, you and I kind of serve different markets, but obviously, you know, there's a lot of similarities. And I'm just wondering, I mean, I could probably do a show a week about the issue of homelessness and the lack of affordable housing. I just kind of wanted to hear from a fellow reporter, you know, it's the same that you're hearing in your markets as well. It seems like this is not just a Eugene or Medford problem. It's not just an Oregon problem. It's a West Coast, if not national problem, isn't it?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's definitely not just a problem that's in one specific area. And we can see that even in the number of amicus briefs that was filed in this Supreme Court case. It was over 80, I think, by the end, all across the country, all across the West Coast, you know, cities and Governor Newsom and in California. Everyone was sort of weighing in on this case as the Supreme Court was preparing to hear it. So it's definitely not just a problem that is in Oregon or in Eugene or in Grants Pass.
Well, a settled case, but certainly not a settled issue. Jane Vaughn, reporter with Jefferson Public Radio, really appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this incredibly important issue.
Thanks so much.
So what might happen now after the court ruling on the Grants Pass homeless ordinance? We turn to a law professor to get some answers. Tong Yin, a professor of law at Lewis and Clark Law School, thanks again for coming on again to talk to us about this particular issue.
Yeah, of course. Happy to be on.
Yeah, just why don't you sort of level set for the audience and just kind of give us a reminder of the Grants Pass versus Johnson case.
Yeah, so the issue before the Supreme Court is whether the city of Grants Pass's ordinances that essentially started off with fines and then would escalate in severity for outdoor camping, whether that violated the Eighth Amendment of the Constitution, which bars cruel and unusual punishment. And so the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is the appellate court right below the Supreme Court, covering most of the Western United States, had ruled that it does violate the Eighth Amendment and struck down the ordinance. Grants Pass sought review in the Supreme Court. Supreme Court took the case, and we got the decision late last week, which was essentially 6-3, the expected ideological lineup, I guess, of the six conservative justices versus the three liberal justices. So that was the result. I think the reasoning was probably not really that surprising in terms of what people might have expected, that the Supreme Court said the Eighth Amendment does not apply to this ordinance, that it's a law of what we call general applicability. That is, it's not singling out people who are houseless, but rather anybody who is sleeping outdoors. Now, you know, I'm giving you the very, very boiled down version of it. Of course, there's a lot to unpack in that, which is to say, maybe that's true that anybody who's sleeping outdoors would be subject to it, but you know, at a practical level, who is really going to be singled out? Is it necessarily anybody, including the person who like drinks too much at a bar and decides to sleep it off in a park where there might not be as many indicators that they're houseless as opposed to the person who actually has set up a tent? Is it only the latter who are being singled out? And the court doesn't really address that particular question. It simply said that, hey, you know what? By itself, an outdoor camping ban does not, or as a sleeping ban, does not violate the Eighth Amendment.
Okay. In terms of sort of the practicality, what does this mean now? So basically, any city would look at this ordinance and say, and again, I apologize if this is a dumb question, but it's like, do they look at this and go, oh, so now camping is banned because the Supreme Court said so. So I need to enforce camping bans? Or is there now a situation where a city can now determine, I'm going to enforce camping bans, or a city could alternatively say, no, I'm not going to?
It would be the latter. Okay. This does not require any camping ban. It simply says that if a city has a ban on outdoor sleeping, that by itself does not violate the Eighth Amendment.
Okay.
And so here in Portland, Portland I think it's the entire state of Oregon has actually adopted a more protective law. And so whatever cities want to do, even though they're freed from the Eighth Amendment because of this decision, they still have to comply with whatever state rules are in place.
Okay.
Now, the only thing the state can't do is the state can't take away protections that the federal government or the Constitution has offered, but they can always offer more protection. And that's the case here.
Okay. Let me reintroduce you to the audience. We're talking with Tung Yin. He is a professor of law at the Lewis and Clark Law School. If there's in addition to the idea of camping, does this ruling from the Supreme Court, could it be interpreted in a way to also allow cities to criminalize other activities that are, for lack of a better phrase, homeless adjacent? I'm wondering about something around loitering or I don't know exactly, because obviously the easiest one would be, you know, illegal camping, spending the night outdoors. I just didn't know if this particular ruling might allow for a city that wants to crack down on homelessness, would it allow them to do perhaps some other things that would now become legal, if that makes sense?
It does. And I think the answer to that question is that we're not even sure that these sorts of outdoor sleeping bans are in fact going to survive other challenges. Hmm. They may not, but all that the Supreme Court resolved in this particular case was the Eighth Amendment issue. And so I had mentioned the idea of how do we know who they're enforcing it against?
Mm-hmm.
There is a doctrine of that's called selective prosecution. Basically, it protects, in theory, somebody from being singled out for prosecution because of a protected characteristic, like, let's say, race or gender as the two obvious examples. And so if you could actually prove that a particular prosecution office is only prosecuting the Black defendants for drug crimes, but not prosecuting white arrestees who commit the exact same crime, if you actually could prove that, that actually is a violation of the Constitution, because it's a violation of equal protection. We have to treat people, not discriminate on the basis of race. So if you could prove that people who are houseless are being singled out, but people who are not houseless are not being subject to a particular sleeping ban, you might be able to raise a selective prosecution claim like this.
Hmm.
I don't want to make people too optimistic. It's a very difficult doctrine to prove, and it's not clear that that is the kind of discrimination that it applies to. But I'm just giving you an example of an issue that the Supreme Court has not addressed at all.
Okay.
Another possible challenge might be, as I understand it, in Grants Pass doesn't even have any public shelters. There's only the a private religious shelter.
Hmm.
So, you know, let's say that you have 50 people in the town who are houseless, and there are only 10 beds available in the private shelter. So what are, even if 10 people went, what are the other 40 supposed to do? This is what the dissent was getting at in that opinion, that you have to sleep. So what do you do? And I gather maybe the city's thinking, well, that's not our problem, go somewhere else. But of course, this breaks down if everybody doesn't have enough bed space, then, you know, what are people to do? And so that might be what we call a due process violation. That is to say, it's not the punishment that's the problem. It's criminalizing something that somebody might not be able to avoid. And so, you know, that could come up again as well as a different issue. So in some ways, this opinion is very narrow in resolving one issue.
But it could, I guess my last question for you is, do you expect that, for example, legal scholars, homeless advocates, you know, I don't know, the ACLU, something like that, are they going to try and attack this ruling some other way by trying to perhaps some of the arguments you just brought up? Is that what you anticipate? Is that we're not done necessarily with this, and that other organizations who dislike the ruling are going to try and attack it through sort of other means along the lines of what you just talked about?
I would think so. I mean, in some senses, you know, you have to think that, you know, I don't know, the ACLU, of course, has many different issues that it's going to be thinking about. And so it's sort of have to pick and choose. But let's say that you are an advocacy group that your only focus is on helping people who are houseless. Mm-hmm. Then you might think, well, what do you have to lose other than to raise other challenges? Because if you don't fight back, then it's like, okay, well, I guess cities will enact these sorts of bans, and your clientele or your constituents, let's say the people that you're trying to help, I mean, they're going to be subject to these bans. The challenge, I think, the trick is, can you file a lawsuit and win, but not win so much that you catch the attention of the Supreme Court? Now, if you're a national advocacy group for houseless, then, you know, you have kind of a different challenge, which is that, you know, you a bad law in one circuit, say the Ninth Circuit or the Fifth Circuit, most likely. I mean, that bad ruling is going to be confined to that particular jurisdiction. But again, if you catch the attention of the Supreme Court, then it becomes nationwide if you lose. And so, you know, in some senses, you, as a national organization, you might have to wonder, is it better just like not press the issue right now? Because we could end up with something worse nationwide and just wait for the composition of the court to change. I mean, these are, you know, kind of legal chess playing you got to do, but.
Sure, which seems like that's for a lot of issues these days, I imagine. Tu Yin, who is a professor of law at Lewis and Clark Law School, I really appreciate you coming on and explaining this. This is such an interesting and potentially profoundly impactful ruling. I really appreciate your expertise on this.
Yeah, of course.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow, we'll talk with Lane County and the CEO of a recycling company to learn how we do a better job of managing our waste and extending the life of our landfill. I'm Michael Dunn, and this has been Oregon on the Record from KLCC. Thanks for listening.